Welcome to Stop for the Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I've been SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have TalkCast every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to Talkshoe website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for Quality 17702 or Starfleet Universe On Call or SFU On Call. You should find me. But if you want the best web experience out there, go to Twitch.com. Sorry, Twitch.tv. Forgive me. Go to Twitch.tv/SFU On Call and you can join the chat room there. They have a nice bunch of people and you can join there if you want. You can even follow me so that you can find out when I start recording, which is usually a little bit like 9:35 is around when I start recording. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you want to follow me on the ever dumpster the dying platform of Twitter. At least that's what it seems like at the moment. You can follow SFU On Call, you know, same spelling as the email address. Or you can follow me, my personal account, Paul Franz, which is getting quieter and quieter. That's PAULFRANZ. There is no T in that. And also Franz Games, if you want to see what's going on with that. I will probably be creating Mastodon accounts for those two. And I will report what server I'm on and so forth with those shortly. So next week I will tell you, well, not next week, next month. Sorry, forgot about that. Just a reminder, I'll just do it now, which is next week there will be no podcast. It is Thanksgiving here in the United States. And given that, I will not be able to do a podcast because my wife otherwise will kill me. For spending time with you guys instead of spending time with the family. So, after tonight, I will see you guys in another 2 weeks. Some quick news from A to B this week. We have Operations 2022 is now available on the e-tailers. You know, the Wargame 23, Drive-Thru RPG, and Wargame Vault. Find them there. You can download them there. The hard copies will be available a little bit later. I forgot what ADB mentioned why. Because ADB already did the proofreading. I'm not sure why there's a holdup on the paper copies. They said it, and I forgot. But anyhow, moving on to the SFB Online tournament. That's the Sapphire Star 12 tournament. Round one is completed, which is awesome to see. And heck, half round two is already completed too. So you will have the semifinals, and I will report who made it finally to the semifinals. Obviously, I did not. I got knocked out the first round, and I'm still evaluating that and to see, okay, what the heck did I do wrong? I know what. I know what I did wrong, but I'll talk about that on the podcast a little bit, and I do mean a little bit. And when it comes to libraries, there's been no updates in either SFB or FedCom. They stayed stable and unchanged. So with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one and only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Star for the Universe On Call. And tonight, well, we have Gary. Hi, Gary.
Hello.
We have Jeff. Hey, Jeff.
Good evening.
And we have Doug. How you doing, Doug?
Hello. How you doing?
Doing good. Doing good. Before we start the topic for this evening, I just want to do a quick, and I'm dooming quick, review of my round one game in the Sapphire Star tournament. Basically, you know, game turn one, he came in, I came in. He launched two 30-point torps. I guess one was pseudo, I guess right. I then headed away. I fired it and headed away, and it hit. Yeah, I let it hit my, I think, shield number one. No, I think that was shield number five. No, shield number one. She hit shield number one. I then headed away because I didn't want him coming in on me. And then I actually, no, before then, I actually hit him with my overloads at range four, you know, and four Fraser ones. And then range, on turn two, we both went running around. Actually, he launched a 60-point torpedo later in the turn one, and then I just kept on running. No, he did that on turn two. That's when I started, and I just ran, and we didn't have any interaction for like almost two turns. And then on turn four, he center lined me, off my ship number five, which actually wasn't too bad, and we both fired impulse 31. I knocked down half his number shield number one, and he hit, almost knocked down my shield number five. Next turn I did Star Castle for a little bit by first launching a Wild Weasel. He came around, and that's where everything went nuts, because He came in fast, and then just went around me, and he had another torpedo ready at that point. And I'm looking at this and going, okay, well, I got a problem, because his torpedo's gonna hit me in the rear, because I sandcastle, I tacked around, and then I started going off at like speed eight, because I figured I can't stay still for the whole turn, because otherwise he'll stand still. And then just tractor me or just knock down all my Wild Weasels and then finally kill me. Because he could have done that and just, but I did a second hit, and actually I succeeded. And that's when I kind of had too many, at the end of everything, I just had too many internals, too much damage, and that was it. So I conceded at that point, because I got three of my four particle cannons were gone. I was down to two shield crackers and six phaser ones, and two phaser threes. So it was not looking good for me. And he only had like eight internals. I conceded at that point. I said that's a quick abbreviation. And to me, I think the reason I lost was because of turns two and three. I needed to keep on this. Actually, mainly turn three, because turn two I was running away from his 60-point plasma, which was fine. It's turn three where I didn't fire a thing until late in the turn. So I never got, he always was out maneuvering me. I never got around to get my nose towards him, so I could actually chase him down and fire at him at closer range, So that, I think to me, that was the key, because you need to keep on just pounding and pounding and pounding. When you have you're going against a Romulan, this is the Romulan KR, so I figured that, in my mind, I think that's where the big mistake was for that. Turn four, I had no choice, and as it is, I think I did the best that I could for that turn. I couldn't get enough internals because of turn number three. I didn't knock down a shield enough. So, I knocked down half his shields, basically. But still, I should have only knocked down like two of his shields and gotten a lot more internals. So, hey, Chris. Okay. With that out of the way, done. As I said, it was going to be a quick one. because I wanted to get on to the actual topic for this evening, at least the beginning of hopefully a series of podcasts. It might not be in succession, but there will be a series. Oh, and this reminder for you guys who are live and probably don't listen to the news portion, and that is I will not be having a podcast next week, and I'm sure Gary knows why, and which is basically Thanksgiving is going to be here, and Lord knows my wife would kill me if I have a podcast instead of spending time with the family on Thanksgiving night. So, no podcast.
We'll politely excuse you just this once.
Thank you very much. So
spend time with. Okay.
Yeah, spend time with your family. Yeah. So.
Sure.
Well, I know you always spend time with your family too. So. Lord knows, I know Erica
yeah.
would. Yeah, I'm sure she would not be too thrilled. Anywho, I'm sure, and my guess is probably Jeff is going to still be on the road.
Sadly, I will be.
Figured as much. I know, believe it or not, Jeff, you're the second truck driver that I know who plays SFB.
That's interesting.
Steve McCann.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's a dumb number. He'd be the third one, yeah, because that's Steve McCann. Well, Steve McCann originally was an EMT. And then started doing truck driving. Before him, there was a guy named Clint. And he basically played by email. This is back in the day that played by email. We conversed back and forth. And actually, he was trying to, this is back in the day when they were looking for people to drive trucks in Iran. Iraq.
Oh, wow.
In Iraq. They needed truck drivers, and he wanted to volunteer. And he couldn't, he couldn't pass the criteria for that. So it's okay. But, you know, at this point, I'm sure I feel pretty confident saying Clint's probably dead at this point. Lost contact with him many, many, many years ago. But anyway,
I should try looking him up on Facebook by name.
I'd have to look.
Never know.
That's true. I'd have to first find the old email address that I had for him and his name. I remember his first name was Clint. And his wife had a book store, and they had an AOL account which they used for the bookstore, and they would share it. It was like CC Book Nook or something like that, something along those lines. I forget the exact email address, AOL email address, but I'm sure I have it in the archives somewhere, because I keep. I'm trying to. That's one thing. When I moved everything to my laptop, I'm trying to trim things down tremendously. As Doug knows, I trimmed down things around here, gave Doug a load of games that I no longer play, but I don't want to really. I'm getting rid of from my own use anyway. But anyway, back to games, and we have at least around 40 minutes, if not a little bit longer, to discuss the history of what's happened in the Starfleet universe in the past 20 so years. I figure place to start, of course, is the Captain's Edition of SFB. That's a good starting point. Because Captain's Edition of SFB, for those who've played SFB, and that was the first edition after the Commander's Edition. The Commander's Edition, for those who've played Starfleet Battles for way back in the day, that's when they had three volumes. They call them volumes. of rules. The volume is, when it comes to amount of material, wasn't that large overall. But it only focused on certain empires for each of the volumes. But, you know, and I do not remember which each volume focused on. So, because you had the first commander's editions of the rules, and then you had volume 1, volume 2, and volume 3. And then you could buy the modules. Modules are 1 through, I don't remember how many they had at the time. At the time.
I think it was 10. It was either 9 or 10, wasn't it? Way more than that.
Oh, when they stopped making the module R's, it was like 14. But I'm not sure what it was back in 1989. Because remember, that's one of the things that they did in the Capitalist Editions is they updated the graphics. They went from the stenciled look of the SSDs, where you had, you know, had the outlines that were basically hand drawn outlines. Not quite hand drawn, but they were templates, drafting templates that were used to actually draw the SSDs. And then after the Captain's Edition, they went to computers and computerized SSDs. Where they, you know, oh yeah, okay. I did not know that, Chris. Chris mentioned that the volumes correspond to the three expansions of the Designer's Edition. I didn't know that the Designer's Edition had expansions. Actually, I think I did. I totally forgot. But anyway, that was one of the big things that happens in the Captain's Edition is that in the Captain's Edition, they actually, you know, did that change, and then they also took a lot of the rules and brought them together. Because one of the things that, if I recall correctly, with the volumes 1, 2, and 3, is that you actually had to kind of piece together the rulebook. Yeah, in fact, I feel pretty confident saying that we had to piece it together because of the different sections. Because you'd have, for each empire, you would have, you know, an E section, some more G's, some more D, you know, whatever, of those different sections for those rules. Of course, the funny part was when they actually produced like a volume, or even in the Captain's Edition, they did this because the original basic rule book for the Captain's Edition, they'd have references to rules that you didn't have, which is fine. You know.
They still do that. They still do that.
Yeah.
Like if you buy basic and advanced and the master rule book, and you keep seeing references to something called Sabot Plasma, you have to buy R10 to get the rules for it.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, Plasma Sabot is in the 2012 edition of the Master Rulebook, so just to point that out.
Say that again? What was that, Gary?
The rules for Plasma Sabot are, the rules for Plasma Sabot are consolidated, are part of the consolidated rules in the Silver Edition Master Rulebook that was first made available in 2012. So if you don't want to have to get R10 separate because to have those rules, you can get them. They are consolidated together in the Master Rulebook.
That's what I would have thought, but I remember looking and not finding them.
They're in the PDF I have, because you can get the Master Rulebook from Warehouse 23. It should have the updated version that ADB has made available. But I'm fairly sure that the Sable rules are in there. Because it also comes with all the rules from like module X1 and X1R, and then the ones from the 3Y error modules. What it doesn't have is they haven't yet consolidated the information for module C6, because So they only have the early years weapons for the things like quantum wave torpedo and disruptor cannon, but the modern versions
right.
have yet to be put anywhere. So.
There it is. Yeah. Yep. It's right there in the Master Rule, the electronic version of the Master Rule book, FP-11, Plasma Sabot.
Well, I guess I'll go looking again, because that's a huge PDF, and sometimes you don't always find what you're looking for the first time around.
Yeah, it's the rule is FP-11. So, and then, of course, you have ECM plasma, which I think was introduced at the same time as the Sabot. Okay, let me bring that back.
I hadn't run into that reference yet. So you can jigger a plasma torpedo to function like a ECM drone? Is that what the way that works?
Oh, ECM plasma?
Yeah.
Yeah. In that it follows the unit that launched it. Yeah, the rule FP-12, which is ECM plasma. An ECP generates 3 points of ECM function in that regards as an ECM drone. This includes all ECM drone rules, FD-9, except as noted in FP-12. Note that as a unit cannot benefit from two ECM drones, it cannot benefit from two ECPs or from one ECM drone and one ECP. This ECM generation uses ECCM generator included in all PPDs, and hence ECP cannot generate ECCM. Bubble. And so forth. And of course, the ECP, that's interesting. An ECP has endurance of 96 impulses, which is 3 turns. Interesting. And ECP does not cost any energy. Interesting. You got to be chasing down a rabbit hole now, man. Really? Did you have to do this to me?
Whoops.
Okay, because I was wondering. Okay.
So, Paul, just while you're doing that, just go on a slight tangent. It's sort of worth mentioning that the 2022 edition of the Fed and Empire Advanced Operations Rulebook went up on Warehouse 23 this week, but it is still they're not going to commit it to print until they take a fresh round of reviews. So if anyone gets the PDF and sees something that they're not too sure about, they should go to the BBS and post errata notes in the thread that was created. So, and then that'll all get reviewed, and then it'll get formally, you know, published once that's all factored in.
Yeah, what thread did they create for it? Is it like an after actions report?
It's if you go onto the F&E section of the BBS, then there's a section for the so-called war book.
Mm-hmm.
And then under there, there's one for Advanced Operations 2022. And then there's a new thread that was just created like a day or two ago that basically says something like 15th November or 16th November thing. And
it's F&E War Book.
People can expect...
The title is F&E War Book, subfolder StratCon 21 Update Advanced Operations, subfolder reports on 15 November PDF.
Okay, there it is. Got it.
That is correct, yes.
Got it. Huh. Interesting.
And just to go on the tangent just a little bit further, Advanced Ops is the module for F&E that introduced things like X-ships and heavy war destroyers and so on. And the current rules have been back updated to account for some of the new units that were added to the game system in the tactical operations last year. So for example, there's new mission types for the heavy war destroyers, particularly for the Federation, and there's new types of X-ships and so forth, that some of the rules are still in TOC-OPS, but they send you to them in the new version of the non-stops. But the only thing is that I don't believe there's ever going to be a formal single-volume war book that the way that there is for like the master rule book in SFB or the reference rule book in Fed Commander. It's just more the case that the war book is more like it's to make sure that all of the rule books that exist to this date are kept up to date on a rolling basis, so that when new products get added, such as Civil Wars or Andromeda, the entire game system is, none of the books basically fall behind too far from yours.
Right. Keep them consistent with one another and so forth. Yeah, and I like the response from Chuck. Gary, that listing on the Fed sit is a ghost, as there's no counter for the Fed HDWH. On the counter sheets Tango or Oscar, it was inadvertently listed early during development, but later confirmed by Steve Petrick that there cannot be a Fed HDW with six F-111s, which would be kind of cool. It needs to be removed from the sit. Six F-111s.
Well, actually, that topic came up again in 2021 when the TOC-OPS counter sheet was being done up, and there was a note at that time saying that, in fact, the original rule that was in the Federation's Master Starship book about the F-111s being on heavy war destroyers was correct, but I didn't want to go into that tonight because it's kind of a thing that kind of, the last time that it came up, so I didn't really want to derail the podcast talking about it either, because it's not really a fair venue, because there's if there's anything else that people see in there that is worth posting, then I just wanted to highlight it so that they can go into the discussion thread and post their thoughts. And then try to, as part of the process of getting the rule set as up to date as possible. Although one final thing I'll say is, this is kind of like, this is also, I guess, when it comes to trying to getting people up to speed in terms of what's been going on, this is kind of skipping ahead of it. But one of the current options that exists in as of tactical operations is for a Z variant of the HDW for the Federation, which includes four F-111 fighters and a pair of special sensors in the ship's option mounts. And that is because the other empires, like the Klingons and Romulans, are able to configure their heavy war destroyers or the advanced heavy war destroyers that are in Module X1R as PX tenders, so they can use them to hunt Andromedan rapid satellite bases. So when Fed Empire eventually gets around to Andromedan War, those counters can be made to exist for those empires as they're, in order to help them knock off the RTN. But for the Federation, because in the historical timeline they don't get to use PFs, the Z variant for the HDW is a further option for them that will basically allow them a single ship carrier that has additional combat power to be able to try to tackle a satellite base or at least hold up a larger Andro force in time for other ships to show up and cause it. So it's one of those things where, yes, players can use it now as like a raiding ship, I suppose, but its real value will hopefully come to fruition as and when the Andros are added to the FME game system. So, but anyway, I wanted to not good on that rabbit hole too much.
Agreed. We don't go chase down that rabbit hole too far because we want to stay on topic for this evening. At the very least, at least have a good start. So we have the captain's edition of the rules, and I figure that's a good place to start. And of course, during those incoming years, from the Cabinet's edition when that was put out in 1989, that, you know, they continue to roll out module R's and also additional module C's, modules C 1, 2, and 3, and that module 3 was the one where that actually included the Andromedans and added the rules for the Andromedans into the set of rules. And because C4 was the training module, which had, you know, the shark hunters, the Fracks, the barbarians, those kind of simulator races, the races that actually, I think, wasn't the Fracks that actually became a real, I think the Fracks is one of those ones that originally was not a considered a real empire, but later on was considered a real empire.
No, they're still not real. It's just that they're the most well-developed.
I thought the Fracks were empires. A simulator race.
So,
they are.
They actually have ships on shape like these. But they're just the ones that have been the most quickly to be converted to other game systems, like Flight Commander and Occult Arms and such, mm-hmm. because their rule sets are relatively easy.
Right, right.
And also, earlier this year, there were a few sample SSDs and ship cards showing the quote-unquote friends of the Fracks, which basically would be the same base hull, but what would you do if you maybe gave it plasma torpedoes or gave it hellbores or anything like that, so that you're basically kind of representing, because the original Fracks were designed to be in the academies of the Klingon Academy of the Deep Space Fleet. But if other empires were basically stealing those plans or copying them and wanted to work them up based on their own technology, what would those ships look like instead? So there have been a few sample things worked up in recent months that people can check out as hailing frequencies extras.
Oh.
But I should actually just point out as well, I think you said something about C3, because C2 is the one that introduced the Andromedans, but C3 is the one that introduced the Saltorians.
I don't know, was
the first window open.
Okay. Oh, that was the Tholians. That was the Neo-Tholians and the Saltorians. Okay, with the Webcaster. Okay.
Yeah. So the Webcaster was in C2 with the ISC and the Andromedans.
Mm-hmm.
But the Saltorians, the Wind Cluster, the LDR, and then additional units for the Neo-Tholians and Andromedans were put into C3. In addition, because C3 comes with the rules for Saltorian particle cannons, it also gives you the rules that you need for the Neo-Tholians to use particle cannons instead of disruptors, so that you could, for the first time, play scenarios set in the Tholian home galaxy.
Right.
So, in a sense, both module C2 and C3 together were basically ways to kind of introduce the concept of not just being in the Alpha Octant. So, C2, of course, has Operation Unity, so technically speaking, when you're at the end of Unity and you're destroying the star, the desecrator, you're in the Lesser Magellanic Cloud. And then in C3, because it includes a scenario set around the time of the Saltorian Revolt, it for the first time allowed you to play scenarios in the home galaxy as well.
Right, right. Unfortunately, as we still feel that today, which is still pretty much limited to just the Saltorians and the Tholians, there aren't that many other ships for the Tholian galaxy.
Well, there are, for anyone collecting Captain's Log, issue 40 comes with sample SSDs and ship cards for the home galaxy Pirate Raider and Pirate Destroyer.
Right.
And Captain's Log 41 includes an article that introduces the concept of the home galaxy pirates in terms of like what they're about and how they function.
Mm-hmm.
And so between those two sources of data, there is the knowledge of an empire that has yet to be published called the Nebuline, who mm-hmm. were a former enemy of the Tholians in the home galaxy. So in theory, if there was ever enough interest or effort to get a home galaxy module assembled together, the Nebuline and the Home Galaxy Pirates would be two of the factions that people could look forward to, as well as whoever else was out and about by the time the Tholians were still conquering the MA1 galaxy.
Understood. Do you remember what was in C1? Was that the Lyrans?
B1 was the early wind cluster stuff, so before the fish ships were created.
Oh, okay.
It was basically when the wind still had the auxiliary freighters, as well as the captured, like, Lyran and Xinti and Klingon ships and stuff.
Right,
and also the wind and Lyrans.
Right, and had the rules for the...
B1, yes, also introduced the...
Yeah, I was going to mention that.
Yeah.
Of course, Module C1 also included. Those wind ships also include the radiation zone, and the effects of the radiation zone, and of course scenarios, for some of those battles that happened when ships came out of the radiation zone and were fighting with the winds.
Yeah, because at the time, the first fish ship, I don't think it actually had even been designed yet, because based on the background or the behind-the-scenes material that's in Module C3, it's mentioned about how, I think it was Mark Kosher, I don't know how to pronounce it, I'm not sure that's the right pronounce his name, he basically introduced, I think it was either the Wynn War Cruiser or the War Destroyer, he proposed it as a new ship for them, and in the process, he sparked the entire concept of giving the winds the fish ships, and also sparking the War of Return, because the wind history itself didn't actually go as far as what we now know or think of as the War of Return until C3 came along. So, and that also, of course, gives the Xintis a good chance to have another civil war. So, it's kind of interesting how, but at the time that these C modules were being created, they were, in a sense, basically helping to create the history as they went.
Mm-hmm.
So they were able to basically more fully flesh out, you know, the what was actually happening across the Alpha Octant, like whether it was the Romulan Civil War. I think that was in one of them, wasn't it? Was there scenarios for that in one of the modules? I don't remember, because the ISC were given a role in intervening during the Romulan Civil War.
Right.
And some of these... Actually, that wasn't Module X1 I'm thinking of Module X1. But, so basically during the 90s through to the Interregnum, there's a lot of these products that were kind of placing strong building blocks in place in order to basically create the concept of the Alpha Octant as we know it today. So.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Yeah, I remember the original history of the Wynn when in Module C1 basically had it so that the Wynns, most part, they had the freighters with the upgraded, you know, because they're limited range and so forth. But also, at that point, they had... basically pirate ships, because they allowed pirate, what are they called? Awful.
The Wynn and Rhymes, the Cluster Cartel?
Cartel, that's it. Thank you. The Cluster Cartel, to set up a base and within the cluster itself. And they created a shipbuilding within it, and as part of the deal of that was that the Orions, you know, the cartel would give them some ships that were built from, you know, from the shipbuilding facility that they created in the Wynn cluster, but they didn't have, you know, the special Wynn technology, you know, the doubling of the engines and things like that, which was to me, it was interesting. And then later on, you know, with Module C3 came the whole War of Return, you know, from the usurper. Which made things...
And actually, one other thing, well, two things is, it's worth noting that one of the other big leap forwards was the actual concept of the Federation and Empire map in and of itself, because in the earliest, like even in the Captain's Edition rule book, the basic set rule book, it's just kind of like a rough sketch that you show, that basically show where the Federation is and where the Klingons and Romulans are. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much like extracted from what had been in the Franz Josef technical manual. So Fed and Empire was like the first time that an actual detailed map from ISC space on one side all the way to Lyran and Hydran space on the other was put into being. Also, like in terms of like giving a clear sense of how far away the various planets were and the provinces, and I guess once you're using the rule system in FME, how fast it takes for you to get there, so that SSB could lean into that in terms of how to help kind of build the future history of the setting going forward. Mm-hmm. So, like things started to become a lot more synergistic in the sense that SSB and FN Empire could help feed each other's developments in the sense that one could lead to new ships for the other, but then the other could basically help provide the framework by which newer ships or bases or units or whatever could be understood. But on the flip side, Fed and Empire also, this is a thing that kind of, I think it was already, apparently it was already a thing that was noticed prior to the Interregnum, is that because of the creation of the Fed and Empire map, it basically locked the Alpha Octant into place, in the sense that the number of major empires that you see on that map, not counting the Andromedans, because they came later as invaders,
right,
but in the sense of permanent empires that exist somewhere in and around the FME hex map, basically the existence of FME means that that's it. So because if a new empire was being added, say, off the map near Lyran space, then the Lyrans would need to create a border fleet to patrol that border. And then when the general war starts, they could take ships off that border and then use them to basically help kill the Xintis and Hydrans quicker. So the need to maintain game balance in FME was basically thrown out of whack. Would be thrown out of whack. So it pretty much meant that going forward, if you wanted to add new empires to the Alpha Octant, they had to either be in the simulator, like the Frax, or they had to be early empires that don't exist in the standard timeline, like the Caravians and Carnivals from Y modules. Or they'd have to be empires that lost their chance, again, in the early to middle years, like the Borak and Paladine. So, or they had to be in a parallel universe, a parallel timeline, where the map is entirely different. So, for example, Module C6 comes with alternate maps for both the Paradins and Carnivons to show how differently the Alpha Octant would look had they still been there. But so the overall kind of effect is that basically, if you want to, like when the Interregnum came to an end and ADB pretty much shared its connection to in last connection to Task Force Games and became an ongoing publisher in its own right, anyone who wanted to basically add new empires to the setting that would be real empires had to go beyond into a broad, either somewhere else in the galaxy or somewhere else in the universe. So, on that note, actually, Paul, do you have the ADB website up on your screen there?
I can bring it up.
Okay.
Okay.
If you go to just go to the ADB homepage, if you can.
Done.
So, if you click on the Federation Commander the thumbnail, just mm-hmm. go to the FFCommander.com website.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look in the top corner, there, in the top left corner, there should be one of the buttons you can click that says About the Universe.
Got it.
And then if you're on that page, a couple of paragraphs down, there should be a link that says, Want to see our place in the galaxy? Click here.
Okay. Bum, bum, bum. There. Okay. Got it. Okay.
So, now, bear in mind that for anyone who's listening, ADB have been releasing their Captain's Log magazine issues for a very long time, well before even Captain's Edition. But in Captain's Log, I want to say it's Captain's Log 27, they, for the first time, introduced the map that Paul is showing on the screen now. Or if he is showing it on the screen, by the time I'm talking. But, so basically that map and the description pretty much introduced the concept of what the Milky Way galaxy looks like in the Starfleet universe and where, how, like, what kind of framework it can be built around. So one of the key things that you see on that map are the voids. You'll notice that there's 24 sectors that the galaxy is divided into, so not the kind of quadrants that the franchise uses. Like, there's no Alpha Quadrant or whatever, because that's a post-1979 franchise thing, so ADB can't really use that terminology even if they want to. So, instead, the five voids basically divide the habitable part of the galaxy into octants. So you can actually see the area that the Fedon Empire map has been superimposed onto the galaxy at large. So, for example, it gives you a sense of, if you're looking at things like the Lyran and Hydran off-map zones, that map shows how far there is out there before you hit a barrier, in this case the voids, that stops you from being in the alpha octant and starts you being somewhere else in the galaxy. So basically from, I guess, the year 2000 onwards, or whatever year, because CL27 was published after 2000, so I forget what year it was, but in any case, this map basically helps define, like, you know, if you want to put something new and interesting into the universe, into the galaxy, these are the places where they can go. And what it is that makes them not just carbon copies of Alpha, like what makes them unique in and of themselves. Now, of course, we don't have time to go into all of that, but for anyone who kind of wants to get a sense of where part of this discussion would be going in terms of, like, over the next several issues, or not issues, but episodes that are covering this topic, this map should help set some of the rules of the road so that people will have an idea about what we're talking about when we get to some of these places in the future.
Yeah, and to me, just looking at the map, the one thing that still is kind of interesting to me is the delta portion of the galaxy, which is past, it's the Lyran and the Hydran, past that, will be considered like off map areas. Has not really been explored, because I know that, of course, if in when it comes to some of the Omega stuff, we hear about, going from the ISC, going through the void into the Omega octant. We've heard about stories, had stories about that, but not going past into, the delta portion of the alpha octant,
Well, delta is, I should also note that in the most recent update to the Prime Directive role-playing game, Bit for GURPS, they've actually tweaked the map a bit so that the new version, the most recent version of the map, it actually extends the void from the epsilon sector. It basically cuts the delta sector in half. And so it means that the off-map area for the Hydran old colonies cannot actually go connect to the Lyran far stars in Delta itself, because they wanted to basically make sure that there's no way that the Lyrans could try to finish off the Hydrans by going through the far stars duchy. They have to they have to basically go through the through the on-map Hydran kingdom first. So, but that's just a little kind of side thing. So, yeah, basically the now there is, I guess, another jumpy forwardy thing is one of the new eras that ADB introduced. Now, of course, this topic deserves an episode in and of itself. But one of the eras that was basically brought into being in the 2000s was the early years, which is basically the two generations of primitive warp that exist before the constitution plans of the Klingon D6 were created. And in that era, ADB introduced two new species that are extinct in the modern Alpha Octant, but that historically were there one side or the other. And the Carnivons are one of those two. They are wolf-like species that are genetically related to the Lyrans and Xintis. And their home territory was basically to the northwest of the Wind Cluster. And when they were defeated, their on-map territory was wiped out. But their rumors have it that there's a group of Carnivons who fled to the, I guess, the coreward part of the Delta Sector, to the next galactic octant over, the Sargasso region, where they might survive to this day. But actual concrete info on that region of space is still a bit thin on the ground. So, but so there is, but for the most part, those blank areas, like either in the Delta Sector or coreward of Xinti or Gorn space in the Alpha, Beta, Gamma sectors, are basically there to kind of explain where your survey ships are going when you're sending them into the off-map zones to research in Fenton Empire during the General War. So, I guess there's only so much space, but it's still, it's fuzzy enough that you don't need to know too much right now as to what's going on there. At least until the Andromeda show up, of course.
Very true. Very true. But yeah, that definitely reminds me about the early years. I forgot about the earlier modules. And not just the early years, one of the things that they also introduced in the early years modules, because actually there was more than one, what year was those introduced? Do you remember? It's been a while.
The early years, that was back in the early 90s, wasn't it?
Well, there were.
I believe the first early years module was released before Task Force Games dissolved.
Well, the thing is, though, is that in the designer's notes in Module Y1, it actually talks about how when the deal was done and ADB became their own development, early years was one of the most heavily sought-after products. So it basically was basically saying that Module Y1 was one of the first products that ADB basically self-published rather than having. Because there was, sample ships, for example, the Klingon D4 and the Federation YCA, people were able to playtest those while Task Force Games were still around. But it wasn't until after the Interregnum that it was all put together and presented to people as a fully paid and fully counterintuitive module. At least that's my understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when was Interregnum?
Actually, a lot of designer notes are consolidated into the Master Rulebook too, so if anyone wants to read them, they can go to some of the back pages of the Master Rulebook, and pretty much all of the modules that have been grouped together in the Master Rulebook. You can read the design results from there.
Cool. Gary, do you remember when the interim was? My memory is fading fast when it comes to the actual period of time. And that has, I know it happened during that time. I remember some of the issues related to producing products during that time. I just don't remember what it was.
Well, the only thing is that I myself came into the Starfleet universe after the Interregnum, because away from the actual mod products that ADB themselves published, they signed a deal with a video game company called Tauldron that released a series of PC games, Starfleet Command. But the Starfleet Command games, they're hybrids. Because on the one hand, they have a license from ADB to use the ships and the game mechanics derived from Starfleet Battles. But on the other hand, they license from Paramount Pictures the right to use movie-era designs in terms of what the ships actually look like. So, for example, they actually managed to get George Takei to narrate as Captain Sulu in Starfleet Command 2. And so when they introduced the IFC in video game terms, he was talking about them in it, like from the perspective of the Federation. Now, of course, his character is off the table for ADB, as are the designs like the Excelsior stuff that were in the video game. But nonetheless, the game did serve, for me at least, it actually served as an introduction to ADB in and of themselves, because it basically helped spark an interest in what it was actually all about, like the source material was all about. But there were actually a few things that people would have to unlearn from the Starfleet Command games when going to the SFU. So, for example, the rights to call the Kvintis is a different agreement than the agreements that other agreements that exist, like with the Franz-Josephic State or with Paramount. So I don't think Tauldron wanted to pay that. So when they introduced in Starfleet Command 2 an empire that used the Kvinti ships, they didn't call them the Kvintis. They turned them into a dog-like species called the Mirak, and they called them the Mirak Star League. Mm. So it was still the same ships, like the same designs with the drones coming out and disruptors and so forth, but they were quote-unquote Mirak ships rather than Kvinti ships.
Right.
So if your first exposure to the Starfleet universe adjacent material is through those Starfleet Command games, you'd basically have to forget about the Mirak and think of them as the Kvintis instead. So just those kind of little things, like here and there. And basically by the time I came in, it was already after the Interregnum, so they were already like starting with some of the things like early years and Omega and so forth. But of course, there's still quite a lot to go after that. But I do believe that that there were a couple of newsletters that people were putting together during the Interregnum just to kind of like keep things going a little bit until, you know, things formally came back through the incorporation. So.
Right. Which happened in 2003. I'm looking at Wikipedia on Task Force Games, and it went out of business in 2003, which I assume at that point was the end of Interim and the when ADB got back publishing rights to Starfleet Battles and those games.
I was under the impression that the deal was signed in like 99 or 98 or something like that, but don't quote me on that, because I'm pretty sure it says it in the if you still have the Master Rulebook PDF up and running, you can have a look in the you can have a look in the one from Module Y1, and it actually, or at least one of the other ones, and it basically talks about when the deal was signed and where things went from there. But I think what there actually is that somewhere on the BBS there is a link that gives you information about It's like a web page that tells you when everything was published and what edition they're in. So I'm trying to remember where that is. It's like maybe it's on the ADB home website. Because there's a thing in there that basically talks about, for example, like when Captain's Edition first came to being. And I see it was under L for instance products. this is annoying because I'm pretty sure it's like there's a link to it somewhere. But basically, it's like it kind of tells you, you know, like this product first came to existence in 2001, and then it hasn't had any updates since, or this one was first done in X, and then it became, you know, a new edition in Y, and a new edition again in Z.
Starfleet, Captain's Log 18 was the first product produced directly by ADB, and it goes on the page that it was the 1999 issue at 112 pages. And I imagine that's a good place to start if you're going into some kind of digital archaeology on this. Okay. I know that the last Captain's Log I ever bought was 17 because that was the last one I ever saw in stores.
Yeah, because I think part of the problem, because I think I was suggesting that we start this conversation around the year 2000 or so, is because it's roughly around the same time that things kind of collapsed for FASA with BattleTech. Because BattleTech as a game system was actually not gone very long, because not only did the original designer go to the Clix people and found MechWarrior Dark Age, but there was a company called FanPro that picked up the license to continue to create classic BattleTech products. So BattleTech has only briefly, if ever, been out of development. But the problem was that so many people, because there was no, you know, people couldn't just Google it back then.
Right.
It was basically sense that in the communities that are in a lot of the gaming stores that the game system was dead. And so that's actually the same process thing happening now, where people are basically getting back into BattleTech through the various Kickstarters that they're launching, or through the Harebrained Schemes PC game. And for a lot of people, they're surprised that BattleTech even still exists. So but then it turns out that there's actually been a lot of development in that game system over the last 20-odd years. I wonder if it's a similar phenomenon that we're looking at here, where because of the stuff that happened at the Interregnum, maybe people kind of fell off at that time, but now interest is rising again. And so, I found that page that I was talking about. It's it says Starfleet Universe Text Catalog. So there's a link to it under C for catalog in the master chart. But if you go there, you can actually scroll through, and it tells you various things like So, for example, if you want to have a look at the Federation Commander section, that's another topic we should probably hit on in a future episode too, where you'll be able to basically see, when the or what modules are available and what they come with and stuff. So I'm just trying to scroll down to the Starfleet Catalog section, because there is a massive list in the directory here for all the Shapeways miniatures that have been uploaded since the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's yet another topic. Maybe we should just consider this episode as the kind of the prototype, where we're kind of like hashing out how we're going to address this going forward, so that we can basically make it.
It's a teaser. That's right. Approach. It's a teaser.
Yeah, we got.
Yeah,
yeah. That's the way of thinking about it.
Yeah. Well,
I'm just trying to actually.
It's a baby step. There you go.
Yeah, well, we've got 30 years of history, 20 to 30 years of history to talk about here. So, and multiple products that never existed before the before the 90s, Definitely. But, you know, even...
I'm checking this list because maybe this is the wrong page, but this page is very in-depth. Like, it tells you, like, all the various R modules and what they are and stuff, but it doesn't give you the update list, because the list, the page I'm thinking about, like, for example, if you scroll to module C2, it'll actually tell you first published, blah, 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 updated, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not there. No, my look, I'll find it like 5 seconds after we hang up. But there is definitely a page like that that allows people to kind of get a sense of,
Okay. Well,
basically, lets people know if they have. Oh, yeah, update list. I found it. Yeah, you for update list. Sorry, I'm a complete fool. So if you go back to that A to Z master index, scroll down to U, and then you can click on update, and then this one has been updated in May. And so, for example, if you go to basic set, it'll say first printed 1990,
mm-hmm.
rule book revised massively 1994, and again 1999, and the SSE book was revised in 2000. And then it says here the 1999 resurrection rule book ran out of stock during 2005, only began just for their printing a new rule book extracted from the SSD master rule book. Because actually, that's another thing as well. Is back in the day, ADB used to have to get a third-party company to print everything that was in paper. So not even just the counters, but also the rule books themselves.
Right.
So nowadays, they have an internal Kyocera printer that allows them to print the rule books on demand. Now, they
right.
still have
well,
to order the counters from well, third party.
Yeah, but
and the cover, the color covers, so forth.
Understood. But that them
yeah.
doing it, the printing on demand started after the interim. That's when they bought these big printers that they, so they could actually print the actual rule books in house. The only thing they had to actually pre-purchase were the covers, because since they're all they're printing black and white, they could actually they had these basically these printers that could print out, you know, just churn out copies of the rule book, and it actually cost them, it'd be cheaper for them to do that than to actually have a manufacturer who created could actually print out all these rule books and then have ADB to actually put in out the outlay for create for printing out all these rule books. So they changed to a print on demand model so that, you know, they could actually as required, they could print out a new copy of the rule book, you know, a copy of the rule book that you needed. Okay, we can print it out, boom. So the amount of stock that they were needed to have, you know, the number of copies they had to have in stock was a lot less. They didn't have to buy 1,000 copies of a rule book and they only sell 500, and then they're stuck with 500 copies, which had to be burned or whatever, because either there were updates that need to be added to them, or more to the point, that they had a new module that might supersede it, you know. And then that's what they had the problem with Starfleet Battle Force, and that they had all these copies. And I think they still have copies of Starfleet Battle Force, which they printed like 20 years ago. You know, it's still. But the thing is, when it comes to Starfleet Battle Force, when it comes to that card game, the graphics still hold up to this day.
Yeah, they do.
Because they're beautiful. The what they've got on the cards is absolutely beautiful, and the style might have changed a little bit, you know, but I still think they're beautiful cards, you know. But anyhow, we're gonna have to wrap it up for this evening because it is getting late, and I have to put this thing together. Obviously. A reminder that we're not going to have a podcast next week. So those on the podcast feed, sorry, you're going to have to wait after Thanksgiving and I might put out a little Thanksgiving greeting on the podcast feed so you guys can say a merry, you know, happy Thanksgiving from me. But
come back next week.
Uh-huh. But I will not be actually doing a live recording next week.
With a big, like, a Yule log thing saying, we'll be back next week. Holiday symbol. There you go.
Yep. Uh-huh. Actually, this year I'll be streaming all the way through Christmas. Because Christmas is on a Sunday, right? Or is that on a Saturday? I think it's on a Sunday. If I recall correctly.
No idea.
I feel pretty confident in saying December 25th is on a Sunday. So yeah, on those years where Christmas is on a or Christmas Eve is on a Thursday, and so is New Year's Eve on Thursday, that's when I take off for like 3 weeks. Because it's like neither one of those days am I going to be doing a podcast. But this year is not that way, so don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, guys. We'll have it all the way. We'll have podcasts all the way through December, going all the way into January, and we'll keep going. You know, I've been doing this for over 15 years, and I will continue to do it. So,
can't argue with results.
Agreed. Gary, it was. Yes.
I guess one final note before we wrap up is just to kind of double back this module, that update page. I would strongly recommend anyone who basically does want to catch up on how things are going. This is a really good page for it. But to go back to the earlier stuff, it says first printed module Y1, first printed 2000 Nova Visions has ADB logos, and then Y2 was in 2008, and then Y3 was in 2010. So, but the only thing is that Y2 and Y3 were done in a different format, in the sense that basically it was easy for them to upload the Y2 and Y3 to make them available for people on Warehouse 23. And they also have the infamous crossword boxes and stuff for telling things like VM service data and stuff. But the Y1, I think, was done before then, so it would need more work to get brought up to the point where it can be uploaded for people to buy as a PDF rather than buying it in paper.
Yeah. The Crawford box is the bane of Steve Petrick's existence.
Oh, I remember the days back when they wouldn't even do a PDF. When Mr. Petrick was totally opposed to any kind of electronic form of the game.
No.
Because of, you know, he was afraid it would be. I remember those discussions on the old BBS way back in the day.
Yep.
Oh, yes, history of the game.
Agreed.
That was a random thought.
Yep. Okay, well, wrap up with that because I have to get sleep, guys. I got to wake up in 6 hours. Because believe it or not, I actually work tomorrow. You know?
Oh. That's a four-letter word ending in K.
Okay, guys. Well, Gary, you have a good night.
Good one. Thanks for having us on.
Yep. Jeff, stay safe evening out there. And you have a good evening.
I'll do it.
Okay, good.
Dirty side down.
Okay. Bye. Doug, always a pleasure. You take
have a good holiday.
Yeah, we'll do it. You too, and take care of my godson. Okay, connect. So, started the journey that we are going to be on for hopefully the next month or so. maybe 3 weeks, maybe 2 weeks. Definitely, I think it's going to be 3 weeks minimum. And hopefully we can continue the journey, because, you know, it's going to be interesting, especially for going through the products that have been created throughout the years and the timeline for how those change, when those changes occurred. We haven't even gone into one, which is, we obviously are going to need to talk about, is it going to be F&E? Because of one of the things that definitely happened, you know, that early on was, of course, the redoing of F&E. You know, that's one thing that happened around the year 2000, is they created a whole brand new version of the rules. You know, and that's part of that history that is of it. And, you know, unfortunately, that seems like an ongoing project evermore, which is updating the F&E rules to make sure everything stays in sync, and especially stays in sync with SFB. So, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.